broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host, Stephanie Sumner.
And a very good morning to everyone in the studio and to our listeners. I'm glad to be back after a little bit of a time out, and welcome to you guys.
Was it time out?
Well, it was a little bit of work, to be honest. Okay. And I think Joel also changed some of the timings on me for filming and, you know.
Recording?
Well, recording. Yeah.
Yeah.
We know
what you're all right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Steph.
Thanks. Thanks, Joel.
We missed you.
Thanks.
The ever-evolving schedule of Joel Hewitt. I think we're all aware of that one.
Yep. But exciting. We do have a long weekend on our hands this weekend. So what are you guys doing?
I'm actually heading to Perth for a high school reunion.
Oh
wow.
Yeah.
How many years?
20 years.
Wow. It's a big one.
It is a big one. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing where people are at now. Lost contact with a lot of them, so yeah, it'll be an interesting experience.
I think, Joel, you've got a high school reunion coming up pretty soon yourself.
November, yeah. Yeah, well, I remember, well, I don't quite remember the 10-year anniversary. It was quite a big night.
Who organises them? Is it the school puts it out or someone from the year coordinates?
My school has an ex-student association. That's actually staffed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's good they actually keep up with that.
Yeah.
A lot of schools don't. I don't think we've had another one at mine. So
And I haven't, but my school no longer exists.
Doesn't
my
it?
High school. No, it was one of those schools that was shut down. Oh, I think I was actually the last. So the year that I completed year 12 was the last year that school existed.
No wonder.
Mm. we broke the mold.
Brett did. Yeah, do you still stay in touch with them?
A few people, but we haven't had a reunion of that sort of, you know, the whole class for probably since the first two or three years when we all still kept in touch.
Oh, that's so good.
But it doesn't happen for us.
All right. Well, kicking off today's topics, we're going to throw it to Joel. You're going to you attended a fund manager presentation last night, and you're going to tell us a little bit about what you heard.
I did. It was actually quite surprisingly positive. Everyone seems to be in this attitude. Well, certainly I got so used to everyone being pessimistic and downbeat about what the future of the Australian economy was looking like leading into the election that it's quite a shock to the system to hear somebody so optimistic and positive.
Right.
It's a welcome change.
Mm. Yeah, it very is. Welcome change. This particular fund manager, so I went and listened to OzCap. They OzCap run a $500 million long-short equity fund in the Australian stock market. So what that basically means is that they are looking to invest in companies that rise in value and bet against companies that they think will go down in value. And look, it was a really, really compelling, upbeat, positive presentation. And I thought that, look, you know, some of the points that he made were quite interesting. We should share some of those points with the listeners today.
Great.
Most of you would probably understand that I also am relatively optimistic, or at least not overtly bullish, but certainly I'm not concerned about a recession or an economic downturn in the immediate future. And it was nice to hear that somebody else was coming from the same position. But he touched on the recent changes to APRA and the servicing, the changes to servicing.
Okay.
So basically what he said was that if there was a 2.5% buffer on interest rates at say 4%, which would mean that we're now looking at a 6.5% servicing rate on loans, that would increase the borrowing capacity of the average person by 11%. But if it fell down to 6%, the borrowing capacity actually rises to 20%.
Wow.
So if you think of a normal $500,000 mortgage, now you can borrow $600,000. He said, think about what that extra $100,000 of borrowing capacity can achieve. Maybe it puts somebody up into a higher price property bracket. Mm-hmm. Maybe it gives somebody $100,000 extra to do renovations, yes, refurbishments.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it gives them another $50,000 on top of the extra $50,000 that they've spent to get into a higher value market on furniture and new appliances and various things that might go into that property.
All consumer spending.
And he was very, very bullish on the impact that this would have on Australian cyclical companies, so retailers, banks.
Right.
He believed that this was actually going to be a major positive for Australian banks and Australian financial services companies.
Mm-hmm.
And he was starting to accumulate positions in retailers, financial services businesses, and even materials companies as well.
Mm. Okay.
Joel, not being pessimistic, but people are already in debt up to their eyeballs. Do you not think that that could be a bad thing if people have access to another $100,000?
Well, interestingly enough, he did acknowledge the fact that Australian households are heavily indebted. But if he also showed this chart here that showed that the Australian household income to repayments is actually in line with the 20-year average.
Mm.
Because right, interest rates smack being so bang in line with the 20-year average.
Huh.
So, yes, you're going to hear noise around, you know, the odd retailer shutting down, and you're going to hear noise of the odd person not being able to meet their mortgage repayments and having their houses foreclosed on. But the reality is that that always happens regardless of the economic conditions. There is always going to be bad operators, bad business owners, bad people who can't manage their mortgages. And they're more of the outliers rather than the average.
Mm.
So, but it is a risk. There's no doubt about that. That it is a risk. Now, just a couple of other charts that he brought us to as well before we start to look at some of the specifics. So he just talking about valuations on the Australian Stock Exchange. Now, there's a couple of raw, crude measures that you could use for assessing value. The first one is just looking at the dividend yield. So the average dividend that an Australian company pays out. And where that currently sits relative to history. Well, at the moment, the average company is offering a yield of around about 4.7, 4.8%. Now, that sits above the long-term average of around about 4.25%. So if you're looking at Australian stocks based on just the dividends that they pay out, they're paying a high level of dividend, which generally means that there's some value there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because share prices operate inversely to dividend yields.
Mm.
Higher the share price, the lower the dividend yield. Higher the dividend yield, the lower the share prices typically.
Right. So the argument is if your dividend's high, basically the shares are cheap at the moment.
Yeah. So he was making the argument that we're not expensive. We're probably slightly cheap, actually. Mm-hmm. He also had a look at the historical price to earnings multiples, and he was suggesting that the current year's profits, so the profits that have been reported so far to date, looking at historical multiples of those reported profits, the Australian Stock Exchange is actually trading around about two. So if the average is around about sort of 18 to 19, around about 18 and a half times historical reported profits.
Yep.
And today we're trading at around about 17, about 16 and a half to 17 times.
Okay.
So there's even a little bit of value based on just reported profits that Australian companies have generated. He then looked at what is the difference between the yield that you can get on an Australian blue chip stock versus the yield that you can get on an Australian 10-year government bond. And it's generally pretty rare for, well, historically, you would tend to find that if the 10-year government bond yield is in line with the average yield that the Australian largest companies generate, it's generally an indication of fair value. And when the 10-year government bond yield is trading higher than Australian shares, it probably means that Australian shares are perhaps overvalued because they're giving less yield.
Mm.
But when the Australian shares are offering more yield than the Australian 10-year government bond, it's a sign of reasonable valuation or attractive value.
Mm.
Right now, the Australian share market is trading at a spread of around about 2.5% to 3% above the current 10-year government bond yield. So you're getting more yield out of Australian shares than what you are out of 10-year government bonds, and we've got a differential of around about 3%. Which is one of the largest spreads that we've had over the last almost 8 years. The previous time that we saw spreads this high was in 2015 and 16 when the stock market bottomed because of the oil crisis. Aussie stock markets rose very strongly off the bottom of those lows. And the previous time to that was back in 2012 when we had concerns around the US government shutdown and the US government potentially defaulting on its debt.
Joel, what's the 10-year government bond? How do you explain that? What is it?
So when governments want to borrow money to finance infrastructure spending or social welfare programs or any government expenditure programs and they don't collect enough money from taxes,
yep.
then they go out and borrow. And the way that the governments typically go and borrow is by issuing bonds, which is an investment security that allows investors to lend money to the government, have certainty that in 10 years' time they'll get that capital back, and in the meantime they'll collect principal repayments.
And anyone can invest in those?
Anyone can. But
anyone with $100 million.
So you can invest in it, but generally the size of the tranches that you have to invest in are prohibitive for retail investors.
Okay.
There are institutions and businesses that do chop those tranches up so that smaller tranches can be fed on to individual investors, mm-hmm. but you're still generally looking at $500,000 minimum tranches to get access to them.
Mm-hmm.
But the point being is that on multiple measures of valuation, the largest Australian stocks, the 200 largest Australian stocks, are not overvalued by any stretch based on these generally accepted valuation metrics. In fact, they're offering relatively attractive value. So we're in an environment where we've now got some potential catalysts for improved economic performance in an environment where the largest 200 companies are presenting some attractive value. And then just structurally, there's two key things that he'd like to just highlight as well. First being our population growth. Now, there is a correlation. He showed that there was a significant correlation between the population growth of a country the average 5-year population growth of a country and its 10-year GDP growth. The higher the population growth over a 5-year period of time, the higher the 10-year average GDP rate is for any particular country. Now, Australia, out of all of the major developed world economies, actually has the highest population growth rate out of Canada, the United States, United Kingdom, Germany, France, and Japan.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And we have actually averaged the highest rate of GDP growth amongst those countries as well. So our GDP, our population growth has averaged around about 1.6%. Interestingly enough, 0.8% of that 1.6% was actually natural population growth. So, you know, new births minus deaths.
Mm-hmm.
That on its own was higher than the total population growth of the United States, the United Kingdom, Germany, France, and Japan.
Wow.
Wow, okay.
So just our natural population growth was higher than the total population growth of the other largest economies. Canada was the only one where it was at 1.1%, where our natural population growth didn't outstrip the others.
Yeah.
So fundamentally and structurally, population growth is actually quite supportive for our future growth rates over the next 5 and possibly 10 years. And he also highlighted that supporting this notion of a cyclical upturn was the money that government here in Australia is spending on infrastructure programs. And in fact, there's this great chart that shows exactly the amount of spending on infrastructure, roads, rails, these types of investments over the next 3 to 4 years. In fact, it shows all the way up to 2025. The huge pickup in spending on an annual basis that is going to go into these projects across Australia. So today we're expected to spend around about $15 billion in 2019 on infrastructure projects, which is, you know, removing of rail crossings mm-hmm. and these types of things. And that's expected to accelerate all the way up to $24 billion in the year 2022.
Oh, geez.
Now, if you are bullish on large cap companies in the Australian stock market, or you're seeing that there's value in large cap companies on the Australian stock market, the 200 largest companies, and the vast majority of those are in the resources and banking industries,
yep.
then with this spending program that is likely to come, that is already announced. So these are definite plans that are going ahead. These aren't the ones that are wishy-washy and you know waiting on, you know, all governments to approve them. Then there is a huge ramp up in infrastructure spending that is going to take place over the next 3 years, which will support you know consumption of iron ore and cement and copper and various natural resources that we are in abundance of. Banks will be financing these projects either in syndication or on their own. The housing market is likely to find some positivity there with increased capacity to borrow or renovate or you know upgrade your furniture and your domestic living space. And that program of infrastructure spending is expected to remain elevated all the way through to 2025. So,
just the number of jobs that it would create, having an extra $9 billion of spending per year is huge.
Correct. And in fact, he showed another chart that showed that job advertisements, so advertisements for new positions being advertised are actually increasing at a very fast pace, even though the reported unemployment rate rose last month. And what he showed was quite clearly is that the number of people coming off the sidelines and going back to work, the participation rate, has increased. So because you've now got an increasing number of people going and looking for jobs, that the unemployment rate has risen, but that there are more than enough jobs being advertised to fill that new influx of people going into the workforce again.
Okay.
So all things being equal, he favours cyclicals, which is retailers, entertainment companies. He's a big fan of Nine Entertainment Group. Mineral Resources, which is probably one of the best mining services businesses in Australia. He likes JB Hi-Fi. He sees some opportunities in Perth commercial real estate through a company called GDI Property Group, which he estimates based on his valuations that the property that they own is currently being valued at 70% of replacement costs. So you couldn't actually build those properties today without spending significantly more
than what they're
valued at today. Mainly commercial office space in the Perth market. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was quite interesting to get that perspective. I tend to focus a lot because of our global's focus on global factors and looking at the US and what's happening there. But it was a really positive note.
Yep. And can people actually get their hands on this presentation publicly, or is it's only for people that are in the industry?
That's a good question. I'm not too sure, but what I would suggest is that if you are interested in downloading this presentation, perhaps go to the AusCap website. You could probably Google search it. I'm not sure exactly what their website is. AusCap Asset Management. And maybe ask their investor relations or business development team for a copy of the presentation.
Good one. All right, thanks, Joel. We're going to throw to a quick break and we'll be back after this message.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
Okay, welcome back, guys. We're now going to throw over to Louis, who's going to talk about interest rates and the impact on our personal finances.
Yes, interest rates are down. Exciting, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's the first interest rate cut since August 2016. Mm-hmm. It's been almost 3 years since interest rates moved in Australia. And since that time, there's been a few phases. The interest rate cut happened, and it was the second of two cuts to happen at that time in 2016. There was one in May and then again in August, and there was speculation that interest rates might be cut further. And then they didn't cut, and then the expectation changed, and then it was expectation that interest rates were actually going to rise again. And then we went back to this expectation that interest rates might fall again, and now they have finally actually fallen. Mm-hmm. But it is a very long time for interest rates to not move. So for those people who are new home buyers or new business owners, they haven't actually seen interest rates move a lot for quite some time. But let me ask you this. When was the last time that interest rates actually moved up? Does anyone know?
2011 or late 2010.
No good guess, idea. Joel. Yeah. Very good guess. It was November in 2010.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's a really long time
since
interest rates ever rise. Yeah. How do I say that?
Rose.
Thank you.
Increased.
November 2010, so that's roughly a month after a significant event happened in Australia.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Collingwood won
their last grand final in October of 2010.
Yeah, that'd do it.
Yeah, yep, that's
it'd
right.
It'd be the next time they met after that. Yeah. And the economy's booming.
Well, they needed to lower interest rates in order to rebuild the shops that were broken down through the riots.
And my point is, no one's memory actually goes back that far. Or no one's care factor goes back that far. I'm not sure which one it is.
Well, at least 50% of the people in this room care.
That's right. So I'm starting to wonder what is going to be the impact of interest rates on the broader market and the economy and on housing, because it's been a really long time since interest rates went up, and we've had this constant progression of interest rates falling. In 2012, they fell by another 1.25% over the year. And then in 2013, there was two cuts. 2015, there was two cuts. 2016, there was two cuts. Now in 2019, there's been one cut, and there is expectation for another one cut. And because it's been such a long time since they increased, people's memories are short. And I think it's going to have quite an impact, more impact than a quarter of a percent cut would normally have, because it has been so long. So I've got to be thinking, well, now is the time to look at, well, what are you going to do with this interest rate cut? Joel's just been telling us about how things in Australia in general could actually be looking quite good for the next few years. So from a personal finance point of view, if you're now going to be saving a certain amount of money off of your mortgage payments, or your potential mortgage payments, if you're currently renting and looking at getting into the housing market, what can you do with that money that you've saved? So, what is the historical advice?
Pay off your mortgage.
Yeah.
Pay off your mortgage. Steph, is that what you would typically think of doing?
Well, I mean, I'm such a holiday person. But no, you do have to save for a rainy day.
All right.
Parent advice.
All right. So you've got the options of paying off your mortgage or just spending that money. And that's what the economists are trying to get you to do, is to spend more money to help the economy. But there is another option. And for the last generation, there's been this advice of paying off your mortgage first before you do anything else. But what we find is that the historical advice comes from a different time, but it's not the point that it's a different time. The point is interest rates are dramatically different today than what they were back then.
Yep.
So for most of us who learned our financial basics from the habits of our parents, that advice is from a time where interest rates were more than 8% and in fact were as high as 18% on their home loan.
You forget that, don't you?
Yeah. You do forget.
You really forget it.
Yeah, that through the 80s and 90s, it was a pretty bad time for interest rates.
Yeah.
But they've progressively fallen since then, and the advice to pay off a loan at 10 to 18% is substantially different to the advice to pay off a loan at what banks are now offering of about 3.5%. Now, 3.5%, when you look at the inflation rate, I'm thinking it's not quite, but it's almost free money.
Yeah.
Almost. But you can't assume that interest rates will stay that way forever, but it is very attractive. So here's your options. You can pay off your mortgage, but you're going to get bugger all return on that investment. So what I think people should also be considering is, should I be putting that money into assets that will earn a higher return?
Yeah.
And what you want to be looking for is assets that will firstly grow in value, secondly, assets that will also produce income. And the combination of those two means that the amount of income that you get over time is a growing income stream. Mm-hmm. So you invest in something today, and in 10 years' time, the amount of income that you're receiving from it is double what you're getting today. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the value has doubled.
Yeah.
You see, most people will take an interest rate cut, and they will spend that money, or they'll use it to borrow money to spend on a depreciating asset. Mm-hmm. They'll use it to buy a new car,
yep,
or do an upgrade to their home, a renovation, or put in a pool into their house, or just generally blow it.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you're spending money on things that decrease in value, you know what that's going to lead to in the future. You're going to have nothing to show for it. So my advice to people would be, look at what are your plans to accumulate assets.
Yep. So it's a discipline factor, really, because people do get that cut and then they think, oh, I'll just spend it elsewhere. You have to be very disciplined to put the money away or lock it into an account where you can't touch it straight away and not worry about it. So.
Yep.
Exactly. And that's why one of the things I say to people, whether you're in good times or bad times in your personal finances, one of the fundamental things you need is a savings habit.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much you're saving right now, but start the habit of saving $10 a week.
Yeah.
Because then when circumstances change, you've already got the habit of saving. Mm. All you're doing is changing the amount.
Yeah.
Because if you had been in the habit of saving $10 a week, which is bugger all,
it wouldn't.
Well, now you've got this interest rate cut, and maybe you can now save $100 a week.
Look, but if you're a new homeowner, are you going to follow your own advice with that?
Well, we're just getting into the homeowners market again.
Yep.
So our financial plan is firstly a little bit different,
mm-hmm,
because we need to deleverage,
yep,
before we can leverage again.
Sure.
So we do need to reduce our debt before we can acquire our next asset, is the way that we need to do it.
Yep.
But yes, the long-term plan is definitely to be accumulating assets.
So a lot of people need to be aware that these cuts to interest rates coming from these very smart economists are expecting you to not be very bright with your money and take that extra money that's in your back pocket and spend it.
Yeah.
And the smartest thing to do. Yeah. Well, you know, the smartest thing to do is don't change your spending habits.
Just save it.
Take the difference and put it aside and try not to increase your spending on the back of this extra cash flow that you've got.
Or I would actually think that I'd proportion it. So if I'm getting an extra $100 a week in my bank account that I wouldn't have had previously, I'd maybe save 80% of that and have the bonus 20% to at least enjoy.
Sure.
So I feel like I'm getting the best of both worlds.
Sure.
That's so logical, Brett.
Wow.
And if you have a set savings habit already, well, then you can plan it that way.
Mm.
And you can just change the number for what you're saving.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so be smart. That's the message, you know. Take this as a golden opportunity to get yourselves in that habit of saving.
That's right. If you're listening to this podcast, then you're already one of the smart people.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, Louis, how what you're talking about here ties in with the earlier point that Joel made of how people are going to be able to have a higher borrowing capacity with the servicing calculator. So people that are looking at potentially refinancing or borrowing more need to factor in all of this.
Yep.
Not just one or the other. It's or both of these are going to come into play at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And what I'm thinking with what we're talking about, with interest rates coming down, with the servicing assessment rate coming down, with the infrastructure that Joel's talking about, if we're going into a boom time, then you want to be trying to accumulate your assets now with an expectation that those assets are going to rise in value over the next 5 years. So it's a really good time to not increase your spending and start increasing your purchasing of investment assets.
Yeah.
Which investment assets should you purchase? Or whether it's shares or property, whether you're using borrowed funds or cash to buy it, or if you're contributing to super, that's where you need some personal financial planning around it.
When do you think this interest rate's going to come in, this cut? Is there any prediction on it?
Well, it's been announced.
Yeah.
So, and most of the banks have now announced how much they're going to be passing on.
Right.
CBA and NAB are the two majors that will be passing on the full rate cut.
Right.
Westpac and ANZ are not passing on the full amount. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of smaller banks which are passing on the full amount, but not all of them. And interesting is to see that the Westpac group of banks, including Bank of Melbourne, St. George, Bank of South Australia, are passing on a higher rate cut on their investment interest-only loans. They're passing on a 0.35% rate cut on their official investment interest-only loans.
So would everyone know what they're going to get as far as the cut just yet? Or I mean,
most people will know by now about the percentage that's happened. But what you can expect is that your bank is going to send you a letter of some kind. Mm-hmm. Some banks will send you a letter saying you've received a rate cut, but we've kept your repayments the same.
Yeah.
Some people will receive a letter saying you've received a rate cut and we've automatically lowered your repayment because we're so nice and we want to keep lending you money over the full 30-year term of your loan. We don't want you making extra repayments.
Okay. Well,
thanks, banks.
Yeah. Well, there's something in that too. It's just to be mindful of reading those letters and making sure you're making the right decision with that extra money, whether it's going towards your repayments or if you want to stop it and readjust what you're paying back.
Yeah, yep. So it's definitely good times to reassess your financial plans and what you're doing.
Good one, Louis. All right, well, thank you so much for that advice. We're going to throw to another quick break and we'll be back after this message.
Are you concerned about your finances? Maybe you're not sure if you'll have enough money to retire on. Or maybe you've received a redundancy, inheritance, or even a significant promotion, or perhaps a life-changing medical diagnosis. Regardless of your concern or financial position, United Global Capital's advisors are experts in the areas of strategic financial planning, taxation, superannuation and self-managed superannuation funds, risk management, estate planning and investments. Don't let fate dictate your financial future. Take control today and contact United Global Capital for a no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Simply call 03 8657 7640 or email info@ugc.net.au and book your appointment today.
Okay, welcome back, guys. And now we're back to our property guru, Brett. And we're going to throw over to the sales value decline in the property market. Tell us more, Brett.
I can do. I firstly want to back over a little bit of what Joel discussed earlier, because I went to an event yesterday, and this wasn't a topic I was going to discuss because I didn't really think a lot of it was relevant. But now in hearing what Joel said, I thought I'll touch on a few things that may be of interest as well. So yesterday I went to an event that CBRE hosted and they had three presentations. One was from Melbourne's Lord Mayor Sally Capp, another one from Woolworths, and then the last one was GPT, the General Property Trust. I think GPT, is that who they are? Who are one of the biggest landlords or owners of commercial property in the Melbourne CBD area. The part of it that I thought was interesting, and most of it came from Sally's presentation, who's a really big advocate for the city of Melbourne, that student accommodation has boomed around the Melbourne area in the last few years. In particular, in 2018, they provided more student accommodation, so developers and builders have provided more dwellings for student accommodation than they had in the whole of the 10 years previous.
Right. Jeez.
Now, the reason I thought it was interesting in light of what Joel spoke about earlier, talking about how retail, the particular person you spoke about, the other thing that Sally mentioned is throughout the CBD, the major form of transportation around the CBD area is foot, but pedestrian traffic. Yet the space allocation is way out of whack. More of it's to actual road traffic and trams. So the overall plan they're looking at is, if you're a Melbourneite, you'll have heard that they're looking at reducing more and more of the major thoroughfares in the CBD to be only pedestrian-only and walkways. Yeah. So that's part of it, to match that up with the volume of pedestrian commuters. Because you said there's a lot of people getting frustrated that there's, you know, there's logs of people on sidewalks and crushes of pedestrians.
Yeah.
But what that tied into, which was probably why the people from Woolworths and GPT were there, was that that has a massive impact on the retail in that area. So if you think, wow, there's going to be more foot traffic and more space for it, typically, she said, the retailers in the CBD thrive when there's more foot traffic at their door. Mm. So if we create more space for them, and if you think there's a lot more students in the area, typically they're the shoppers more than the savers.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that all that sort of ties in.
Well, I think Joel and I could definitely vouch for that, certainly down towards...
Yeah, well, you're living in the CBD.
Elizabeth Street, you know, towards the Vic Market area. We've noticed a huge amount of development going up, a lot of retail stores under those major high-rise buildings and a lot of foot traffic going in there. So it's certainly changed over the last 5 years.
Mm. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. So obviously that's just confined to the Melbourne CBD, but yeah, in light of what you're saying, Joel, probably the other CBDs are having similar sorts of things happening.
Yeah.
Mm.
So there's a logical tie-in with maybe the retail industry and some of that happening.
Brett, I was also going to ask, when you say student accommodation, is this paid for by universities or is it a lower rate where the students can actually, you know, purchase to
typically
to rent?
Typically it's a lower rate,
right,
where there'll be providers that will buy, so the developers will build dwellings that are smaller than a studio, basically hotel rooms, if you like, that can be bought. And either investors or, you know, the student's family might buy it for the student. Mm. But they're not investment type of opportunities that we look at a lot because we don't see a lot of growth in them.
Yep.
But typically, you know, they're like 30 to 40 square meter apartments or single dwellings where they have a lot of shared services in the building.
Okay.
So you wouldn't find someone in their 30s or 40s or a couple moving into it. Mm. It's really only for the students for their 1 or 2 years whilst they're at whatever university.
Something with room for a bed.
A desk and
a shower.
And that's what will happen if you don't save that extra interest rate money.
That's
correct. Yeah, you could be stuck there for life.
That's what you can afford. Yeah.
And they're typically built sort of right beside a campus of some sort. Yeah.
Okay.
But coming back to the topic I did want to discuss was something that I think is going to affect real estate agents more than anyone else, but the flow-on effect is that anyone looking to sell their house should be aware of it because it'll have an impact on how they choose their real estate agent. Like any person that's you know, either commission-driven or on a wage, there has to be enough money coming into the business for them to hold their position and to continue in that career.
Yeah.
Now, over the last year with the decline in property values across Australia, that's also partnered with a decline in the volume of transactions. So what we mean by that is if the median house price has dropped maybe 10%, so let's say it was 800,000, it's now only 720, and if only 100 of them are being sold versus 200, well, the total value of sales in the marketplace has dropped significantly. And given that the real estate industry is driven on a commission basis, with the average transaction for a real estate agent in commission around 2% of that, that means there's a lot less money floating around for all of these real estate agents to live on.
Okay.
So what we're aware of, and we're probably coming to the end of it, is that there's going to be a clean out, and has been a clean out, of a lot of agents in certain areas where they just couldn't earn enough money. And a lot of owners of real estate agencies were probably having to cut staff because they weren't getting the commission income that they had for the previous couple of years. And the data I've got sort of indicates how significant that can be, but it also shows that there are areas that have grown as well. And I'll add to this in a minute. But to give you some examples, and I'll use Melbourne first because the highest transaction value in terms of total sales and total volume of sales, so the total value of all sales, the biggest areas are still the blue chip suburbs. So the likes of Brighton, Toorak and Kew still had the highest transaction values for the year up until February 2019. Okay. But as an average, they were 35% down on the previous 12 months.
Wow. Yeah.
So as an example, Brighton had the highest total value with over the full 12 months to February 19, $925 million worth of property was transacted. Mm. For the same period the year prior, that was $1.3
billion.
Wow. So you're wiping 30% of transaction value. Now that 30% would equate to a drop of 30% in commission values.
Yeah.
So that means that if someone as a real estate agent was used to earning $100,000, they're down to $70,000. And obviously the squeeze comes because in most performance-driven businesses such as real estate, the good earners tend to always be okay. It's the ones in the middle ground that might start to struggle and therefore exit.
Yeah.
But the flip side of this is that there are areas where volumes and values of total transactions have increased. Okay, but if you look at where they are, so in Victoria, there are areas like Hayfield, Lucas, Dennington, Dimboola. Does anyone know where they are?
I know where they are.
You do know where they are.
I know Dimboola.
Okay. Most of them are not in a metropolitan areas. In fact, none of them are. They're all more either further out or regional.
Yeah.
Okay. So therefore, if you're an agent that was in a metropolitan area not getting enough commission or not being able to win your share of market, yet you wanted to stay in the industry, possibly a move to another area might be the way to do
it. Yeah, sure.
Where values and volumes are increasing. The caveat on that, though, is typically in a lot of those areas, the reasons those values are up is it's a lot of new and off-the-plan sales.
And lower value.
And lower value, but at least the volume's there, so the overall value of that marketplace is significant. But the challenge is, even if you're an agent and you said, I want to move to those areas, a lot of the times when they're new sales off the plan of house and land things, they're being done through marketers or project marketers or referrals. Yeah. So there's not really a lot of resales going on.
No. At least
not a lot for the local agents.
We've got a few infrastructure jobs that'll be going in a
Correct.
Few weeks' time.
Yeah. So where I think it's relevant to anyone thinking of selling their house in the near term, chances are you've really only got the good performers in your market that you're going to have to choose from. When the market's good, you'll get a lot of people that may not be great at their job. When I say may not be great, they're probably capable, but they might not be the best performer. But they would win business because a lot of the best performers are getting the best jobs and maybe not have the capacity to take on more.
Yeah.
So that means if you are looking to sell in the near term, chances are if you look at who's most active in your market, they're probably going to be one of the better agents to deal with.
Yeah, I was actually speaking to another buyer's agent yesterday and just having a chat about that dynamic. He was complaining a couple of years ago how some of these, you know, fly-by-the-night real estate agents that have only just got into the industry were, you know, not willing to play ball with fair negotiation during the boom times. And he's sitting back in delight at the moment that now these guys are in a famine. He's coming in and playing hardball the other way now. Showing no mercy.
I think a good agent that really knows their market, knows their process, knows how to deal with people, they'll always do well because, you know, even with, you know, we said using Brighton again, it's down from 1.3 billion in transaction values to 925 million. There's still $925 million worth of property that's sold. So, you know, the good earners probably, you know, have, say there's 50% of that is always the top performers, while there's still 450 odd million that they're the ones acting on. So they'll survive.
Oh, good advice, Brett. Know your agent. Do your research.
Yeah.
All right, we might move along now to our favourite topic for the day, and that is you can't be serious.
Woo!
Now, you guys always stress me out. What are you going to talk about today? Remember, I work in the brand and reputation industry, so be careful.
A 21-year-old male has been dating, and one of the more stressful times of dating is when you meet the parents.
Yeah.
This 21-year-old went to meet the parents of his 19-year-old girlfriend to realise that he was walking towards a house that he'd been in before. He'd once been at a rock concert, which ended up in a one-night stand. And
where is this going?
He had had a one-night stand with his girlfriend's mum.
Wow.
Crashed and burned.
Yeah.
That is bad.
So he bailed. He didn't go in the house.
Damn, that would have been such an eventful dinner.
Yeah. I think he made the smart choice.
Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah.
I've got one about two brainiacs over in Florida. So these would-be thieves. What's the idea about breaking into an ATM?
To get money out of it.
To get money out of
it. Get the cash.
So here's an idea. How about when you're cutting the ATM, you don't seal it up with your blowtorch? So these two brainiacs thought that they'd try and break into an ATM in Okaloosa Island in Florida. One would be standing there to with a crowbar, keeping watch, while the other one used his blowtorch to try and cut into the ATM, only to realise that he was actually welding it together.
Oh, no.
So the two dickheads ended up running off with no money.
Did they get caught? Do you know?
Not at this stage.
They could go into security. We'll make your ATM safer.
Yeah, that's right.
More secure. New job, found a new business.
Idiots at large.
Absolutely. Brett, what have you got for us?
Ah, yeah, okay. So in the days of the Wild Wild West, remember the wanted posters that you were all aware of? And there used to always be a reward, you know, for the wanted posters. Well, times have changed now, and social media has got a lot to do with it. So a fugitive in Connecticut, so the City of Torrington Police Department had a wanted sign that they'd put out on their social media. And the actual criminal that they were searching for had actually contacted them and said, to tell you what, I'll turn myself in if that particular post gets 15,000 likes. Well, it started out and he said, oh, you know, if you get to 20,000 likes, I'll come and turn myself in.
Wow.
But they negotiated him down to 15.
It's got to have been a millennial.
29-year-old.
Oh, 29, yeah. He squeezes in.
He was wanted on 4 warrants for first-degree failure to appear in court and 3 warrants on second-degree failure. So he had a whole list of charges for, you know, drugs, DUI, protective order violation. Oh, so obviously a really good quality community person.
Yeah,
pretty devastating though if you didn't get the likes.
I know,
well,
right?
He did, and guess what? He didn't turn himself in. Oh, what a surprise!
Maybe he was upset.
A man of his word.
He wanted to up the amount of likes he got.
Far out. Even dishonest on social media.
Yeah, I know.
Far out.
All right. Well, thanks guys for all your input today, and to our listeners for tuning in. Have a fabulous long weekend, and we'll be back next week to do it all again.
Beautiful. Thanks,
good stuff.
Thanks,
Steph. Back, Steph.
Thanks.
You've been listening to this week's episode of The Investor Exchange. To access this episode's show notes, go to theinvestorexchange.com.au and follow us on Facebook at The Investor Exchange for updates on our latest episodes. This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Before making any investment decision, contact United Global Capital by emailing ugc.net.au for a personalised, no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Or alternatively, email us at info@ugc.net.au.